Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast. Welcome back to episode 435 of the White Book. You know, I have not been specifically numbering props and slops episodes, but this is probably somewhere around our 10th or 12th, something like that. I don't know.
Really been doing it that long? I don't think it can't be that long. Started doing props and slops, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird with it being every other week. It kind of, and you know, life in the time of COVID has destroyed all sense of everything.
That's so true. I guess we started this like right after Worlds, right?
So yeah, I think you're right.
So I guess that makes so that yeah, okay, yeah, that would be about 20 weeks ago. So okay, yeah, I guess that's true.
There we go. So welcome, listeners.
I'm Roy. No Glazer this time. Sadly, the hurricane has disrupted his ability to join us tonight. So
we will have substantially less JRPG talk this week. We can't guarantee none.
I haven't played any JRPG in a while, so I'm a little on the drier end there. So less comics talk too. So probably.
Oh, also probably true. I've been way behind on comics, though. I just saw Tom Taylor posting that Injustice Year Zero just had the first like three episodes drop in bulk on Comixology. So I may have to check those out. I'm a sucker both for Tom Taylor and the whole Injustice Elseworlds story. So we'll see what this one's about.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Injustice.
Oh, have you not read any of them?
Nah, it's not really my cup of tea. And I have like no emotional attachment to the video game, so.
Oh yeah, I could care less about the video game. I mean, it's just Mortal Kombat on steroids or whatever. But the tie-in comics have been a surprisingly well done take on authoritarian Superman.
Yeah,
I hesitate to call him evil, but I would definitely call him authoritarian.
I will definitely say that's not really a set of themes that I'm particularly interested in exploring. So
that's fair. That's fair. I waffle back and forth. I don't want that type of thing handled in the main like Superman realm, but I don't mind the different pastiches and the like, you know, like I really love Irredeemable and things like that. They can take it into new angles. So it's probably kind of a fluke that Injustice hit the sweet spot that I did still like it.
Yep.
All right. Well, we said we weren't going to just do a ton of comic talk, so I'm willing to leave that there. And we can move on to the watch category.
Sounds good.
Which I think you're going to dominate this week.
It's true. I guess we'll start with me breaking a rule that I said, or something I said I was going to try to do less of this summer, which was watch less propaganda shows. Well, I failed miserably because Peacock has Law & Order, and it has old Law & Order episodes, the shit I grew up with, and I cannot resist it. I know it's bad. I know it's wrong. I know it's garbage. But Lord, do I love that shit. I can't get enough. I can't get enough. My wife and I have watched like the two seasons so far, I guess, of the, they have kind of the back half of Law and Order. So they have like seasons 13 through 18. It might even be slightly earlier than that. Like,
I don't even know what kind of time period. What would that be?
So this would be the first season that they have available is 2002. Because they talk about 2002, it's the 2002-2003 season. Because they talk about it being a year after 9/11 in one of the episodes. And a lot of that season deals with like 9/11-ish issues. And like, of course, the thing I love about it is it's all ripped from the headline shit from when I was in high school and college. So, you know, it's peak, there's a lot of peak Bush era bullshit going on. So, you know, like controversies and things you forgot about that came up, you know, just nonsense. And it, of course, also invokes the culture of that time period, you know, so now that it's what, 15 years ago, I find a lot of those trappings hilarious, charming, and upsetting all at the same time. So it's a fun cocktail. So I definitely, if you are the kind of person who, you know, likes those kind of things, and again, if you're me for a sucker for like early 2000s culture, because you're just already only 35 and already infused with nostalgia, it's definitely a fun experience as long as you're capable of putting in the context of the show being nonsense propaganda. And the cops aren't even like the worst part of the show. The prosecutors are the worst. They're the real the villains of the show. Where Jack McCoy breaks like every rule possible to get people convicted. it's been enjoyable. It's a good thing to have on at the end of a night or while we're packing and stuff. So.
Turn your brain off.
Oh yeah.
Related. I know you. Oh yeah, definitely. I know we had talked about this in general before, right after Peacock launched, but since you mentioned the streaming service again, now that you've had more time with it under your belt, how do you feel it's holding up as a general service?
I like it a lot, actually, because I also like that it reduces the number of ads it gives you over time. Like the more Peacock you watch, the fewer ads you get, which is cool.
Yeah.
The ads are not super long. I appreciate that. I wish it would not. Oh, go ahead, Will.
Oh, I was just going to say, I feel like the ads, they've hit a pretty solid balance for me there, where like I understand they need ads for the revenue, but they don't feel as impressive and or oppressive and invasive, there we go, as some other services might.
You mean Hulu? Like, I tried watching the X-Files.
I'm going to name names.
Or if you ever watch any of the stuff that have ads on Amazon, that's the worst.
Yeah.
I thought X-Files Hulu was bad, but then we watched Unsolved Mysteries, which has moved from their free Amazon Prime to the commercial Amazon Prime.
Oh, it did?
And, yeah. And no.
Isn't there a bunch of Unsolved Mysteries on Peacock, though?
Yeah, we have. But Peacock wasn't working on the PS4 for a while. I think it just started up late last week. Like Thursday or Friday of last week. So, you know, when we wanted to watch it, we had to use Amazon. And it was just, I hate it. You know, like Peacock is good enough that when we lose our Comcast subscription, when we move, I might just end up, you know, throwing the $8 or whatever Peacock's way, because there's still tons of stuff that I am going to want to dig into.
Oh, for the totally ad-free version?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I was going to say, there's also the like minimum ads or whatever.
I feel like at the point where if I'm going to be spending money, like right now I get the ad, the all with ads free with the Comcast.
Gotcha.
So, you know, so it's just extra value. But if I'm going to spend money, I don't want to pay ads. That's like one of the reasons why I don't like Hulu subscriptions as well, where it's like, you're making me pay money, but you're still forcing ads on me. Okay.
Yeah, understandable.
And it's not like, at least Amazon Prime, right? Like, you know, you get, it's one of many services that you get. So, and of course, Amazon Prime's also been taking away benefits. Like, remember when, like, Twitch, the Twitch part of Amazon Prime came commercial free? That glorious, time.
I did not.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I don't do a lot with Twitch, so I probably
I enjoy watching Magic tournaments and stuff like that on Twitch and stuff. You know, while you're watching a baseball game, Will, I would be watching a Magic tournament. So that shows I treat it kind of like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Peacock has a lot of stuff that I want to dig into. Like, I want to go through Columbo and Murder, She Wrote are kind of on my list as well to really dig into.
I love to rewatch those. Man, my dad had that stuff on all the time when I was a kid.
And the double back to Law and Order, I really, really hope that they get the early Law and Order stuff. Like, I in particular have a strong taste of, like, art and pop culture about New York City in the mid 80s to pre Giuliani period, the like apocalyptic New York period. Like, you can think of like Ghostbusters, like the original Ghostbusters, that kind of attitude towards New York City is like that kind of pop culture I find extremely charming in its own ways and hilarious. And so those early Law and Order episodes are just like infused with that, like, understanding of like New York as this like washed up post-apocalyptic society.
As just truly Gotham.
Yes. Much closer to Gotham from the comics than it ever had as a thing. And you can, of course, like, I shouldn't put my historian hat on too much, but like that kind of stuff leads to the, like that kind of cultural understanding of New York leads to, of course, the election of Giuliani and the transformation of New York for mostly worse, somewhat for better, over the last 20 or 30 years. So anyway, Law and Order was been enjoyable to watch. Two movies that just came on Netflix and HBO Max, or was Inception on Prime? Well,
no,
I definitely
know
it was
Max, because I think I got an advertisement for it.
I'm not going to prop Inception. A Knight's Tale, I will prop A Knight's Tale.
Yes.
Means an endlessly charming movie, as it was in the early 2000s to present. It is a very charming, stupid movie. If you've not seen it, it can be, I think it's one of the early film appearances of Bobby Baratheon, the actor who played Robert. He's an important character.
Mark something, right?
Mark Getty? Something like that? Or
That doesn't
sound Addy?
Quite right. Addy, yeah.
It's a very enjoyable, very fun movie.
It's also like, the first thing that I know. Oh, geez. Why did my brain shut down? Red hair. Alan Tudyk. First thing I know him from.
Yep, Alan Tudyk. It's got Paul Bellamy, who played the Vision / Jarvis in the Iron Man movies and in the Avengers movies.
Fantastic guy.
Right. It has the guy who... What does he end up doing? Oh, the guy who plays Mark Anthony in
James
Rome. Yeah, he plays the Black Prince in it.
Yep.
I'm trying. There's a bunch of like miscellaneous. Obviously, Heath Ledger. You know, it's kind of the end of the early Heath Ledger period. Of he did those like one movie so awful you can't help but love it. One amazing classic. And one famous movie, like in three short orders. That would be, of course, The Patriot, 10 Things I Hate About You, and A Knight's Tale. Are all that early Heath Ledger stuff. Those are all enjoyable movies for radically different reasons. I would prop all those movies, but for different reasons. Anyway, Knight's Tale is really enjoyable. If you're looking for something fun to watch, you should watch it.
Yep.
Inception, I will slop. It is a Christopher Nolan, I don't know, it's a Christopher Nolan movie that's not about Batman, so already I want to fall asleep, but I exaggerate. Inception is enjoyable in the sense of, like, what's the best way to put this? Of watching someone who takes themselves really, really, really seriously fail at what they want to do, at what they're trying to do. And that is enjoyable to watch for me. But as an actual film experience, I cannot recommend Inception sitting here in 2020.
I still have never watched it.
It's worth seeing once. Like, it is worth seeing once. Just simply because it was such a big deal at its moment. It's pretty, like all Christopher Nolan movies. Yes, it is pretty, my love. But it is sloppily plotted and just too pretentious for its own good, like every Christopher Nolan movie, including his Batman movies. But I think I've talked about on this podcast how much I love the Christopher Nolan Batman movies.
Yeah.
So I say that with love. But other Christopher Nolan stuff, I'm not a big fan of The Prestige. I got halfway through Interstellar and I couldn't even hate watch it. I love
Prestige.
Memento spoke to me when I was, 13 or whatever when that movie came out. And then I watched it as an adult. I was like, why did I think this movie spoke to me? This is just bad. And Insomnia, his movie he made with Al Pacino, I think it's Al Pacino, Robin Williams? Insomnia. Yeah, 2002, Al Pacino and Robin Williams, yep. Movie's terrible. Then never seen Dunkirk. Not super interested. Ooh,
I heard a lot of good things about Dunkirk, though.
Interstellar. I feel like I'm missing one Christopher Nolan movie, which I haven't seen. But what's his? Dunkirk, Interstellar, Prestige, Inception. This is not helpful. He did The Story? No, I guess it's Interstellar, Dunkirk, and then Tenet. Which I'm sure will be a movie if it ever is released.
A movie.
So
it will be hard not to be, but I suppose it could not be, just like New Mutants will not be.
Yes, that's true. So I will definitely slop Inception. The last movie thing, speaking of ever coming up, is the big news that just dropped not shortly before Will and I started recording, which is that Mulan is coming to Disney+. And I would absolutely love to prop that, mostly because, I mean, I'm excited for the Mulan live action, I guess. I mean, I'll watch it, particularly if it's on Disney+. And I don't actually have to leave my house to watch it. But mostly because what it means is that if it's successful, they will hopefully release Black Widow, which is what I really want. But that's what I want. So I want to prop the chance that if this project of Disney's is successful, that I will actually get to see the Black Widow movie in 2020.
Oof. I don't know. I mean, I've got multiple things here. One, I mean, I'll probably watch Mulan at some point. I don't have anything specifically against it, but I am getting super tired of the Disney live action retread of its animated films. I mean, admittedly, this one will be more different than any of the others so far, where some have been near like shot for shot remakes. But I am still so tired of this as Disney's new, I don't know. I can't really even call it any sort of like touchstone. I don't know. It's just a really sad retread of their highlight years that is kind of a bizarre way of saying that they've gotten so big they don't know how to do anything anymore. Different units might, particularly ones they've acquired, like I'm looking at you, maybe the MCU, but Disney as a whole feels really lost to me now, or Disney proper, I should say.
Mm.
That said, also, as someone who used to work in the theater industry, mm-hmm. and has friends still employed in it, well, okay, employed is a strong word in today's world. Friends deeply impacted by the death or survival of the theater world. A lot rides on Disney deciding to go ahead and forgo theaters on their big ticket movies. Especially since Disney owns like 2/3 or so of the market now, something like that. So I can't be in favor of this as a business model. I still find the theater experience to be a very valuable to me as a tangible, unique experience. And yeah, anything that moves us faster and further into ditching that, I can't get behind.
That's completely fair. And I have a lot of sympathy for, people who have been negatively impacted by theater closures from the COVID experience. Like, that's no fault of their own. They deserve an opportunity to earn a living, and they obviously deserve, you know, support from government and stuff like that way, you know, during these times. And I'm not the kind of person who's like, the theater should die, or something like that. Like, I'm not a big going to the movies person. I generally only go to the movies. I don't idly go to the movies. You know what I mean? Like, there were times in my life where I'd be like, what are we going to do tonight? Let's go see a movie. Doesn't really matter what the movie is, right? It's just, what's the thing that myself, either, you know, I used to go occasionally by myself, but usually with like a small group of friends or my girlfriend or something, you know, let's go to the movies, whatever movie we can all agree on to go see, let's just go see. I am definitely not that person anymore. I am specifically about going to those experiences that I want to. So either A, to stay on top of the conversation about various things that I care about, like largely superheroes, but other genre things. So like I'll go see like, you know, Suicide Squad, even if I think it's going to be bad.
Still superhero, though.
Because it's superheroes, but even if I think it's going to be bad, because I want to, you know, people are going to be talking about it on the internet. I want to know what it is going to be, you know what I mean? And then there's other superhero movies, obviously, that I really want to see. Black Widow's one of them. And the first place they come is theaters. So I'll go see it in the theaters. The first place it came was Disney Plus, I'd go see it on Disney Plus. Specifically, though, about what's going on right now, I have trouble seeing it outside of my own needs and my own wants, which is I want to watch Black Widow. I want to pay Disney to let me to watch Black Widow. I am not willing to go into a movie theater right now. I don't think it's safe in the United States. I don't know about other countries, but I don't think it's safe at all in the United States. But I would like to see Black Widow. I would like to legally acquire the permission to watch Black Widow sooner rather than later. Hopefully this Mulan experience will allow that to happen. If once this thing dies down and it is more acceptable to go to movie theaters and Disney's like, we're not going to do that for, I guess, Eternals would be the next MCU movie. I'd be fine with that. I have no problem. Once it's socially acceptable, once it's acceptable for my health to go to a movie theater, I will happily go and pay money to a movie theater to go see Eternals. So for me, I just simply, with this crisis is going on, I would like to be able to consume the content that they said that they were going to give me in 2020.
Well, I'm curious, just speaking of that, we've danced around and we have not really talked about the price point. What do you feel about the $30 price point for essentially a rental, right? You are not purchasing rights.
Well, we're not technically
right?
I very seldom purchase anything when it comes to like watching content at this point. Like, I'm starting to think the last non-gift movie I bought was actually Endgame. I bought it as soon as it came out, like on digitally. But most of the time, like, I will wait for it. I'll go see a movie in theaters. I'll wait to go on a streaming service. And sometimes I get, like, for Christmas and stuff, my parents will give me, like, the DVDs and stuff of things. But I don't really have a problem with that because it's really no different than... So if my wife and I were to go see Black Widow, that would be about $30, if not more.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I'm not opposed to just giving that money to Disney. For me, I understand what you're saying, and you're making a good argument about specifically giving it to theaters. But, like, from the consumer point I'm viewing, like, where that $30 goes doesn't matter much to me.
Yeah. No. I'm not necessarily against that price point. I actually think for what they're doing, it's a very reasonable price point. That's give or take the price of two tickets. And, you know, a lot of people that watch Mulan, there will be more than two that have access to it. So honestly, it's probably a discount when averaged out.
And how long do you get it? That's the other thing. Premium fee of $29.99. It doesn't say like how long you get it, this article that I found.
So. Gotcha.
But let's say it's like a week rental. Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty fair.
Yeah, a week honestly is a pretty long time.
Yeah, let's see if this Verge article is better. No. Disney Plus. Yeah, it doesn't say. Yep, it doesn't say exactly how long you'll get it. So, I mean, you know, if it's for just 24 hours, maybe that's a little iffy, but at the end of the day,
that would be pretty fast.
At the end of the day, I have no problem with that again because it's about the cost of two movie tickets. It's cheaper if you buy popcorn and drinks and all that kind of stuff. So, but I will prop the idea because, again, I selfishly just want to watch Black Widow.
I can't blame you there. Being hip deep in the final season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has me riding pretty high on the MCU at the moment. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the next stuff?
Yeah, sure. We can keep rolling on to... We do have a little bit of gaming content this week. In a general sense, Gen Con Online was this past weekend. They made a decently big deal about it, but, you know, just the way things have been and the fact that we weren't having to plan a big long road trip and hotel rooms and stuff, it had kind of been under the radar until basically the day before it started, and I realized, oh crap, it's right now. So I didn't wind up doing any events, but I did watch a handful of seminars and things. I took a look at their kind of virtual exhibitors hall that they had set up, things like that. It was neat as an attempt to still hold some kind of event. They also had a Discord server that they put up with different channels for various activities. They even had one that I hung out in for a while. Let's see. I think it was just titled Food Trucks, if I remember right. So that was pretty entertaining. So they did what they could. I liked it. Watched the opening ceremonies, and they streamed a lot on Twitch and the like. So props, I think, to Gen Con for doing what they could. And honestly, there's a lot of content out there now on Twitch and YouTube that should be up for, I would assume, quite a while now since it was all streamed. So that'll be a treasure trove to keep coming back to.
It looks like they did a really cool job with Gen Con Online. Like, I followed some of like Magic content creators, and I didn't have an opportunity to do anything this weekend, Gen Con related. I was working Battle of Blackwater Bay on Saturday, which was a lot of fun.
I did take a break from Gen Con to watch about a game and a half of your stream.
And then Sunday I was just hanging out with the wife. Didn't really do much, but it seemed like a really cool, I feel like Gen Con showed kind of maybe a way forward for future con organizers. Cause I know we've got, I think PAX Prime's replacement thing is going at the end of this month, right? We're in PAX Prime. Yeah, season.
I think so.
And then of course, PAX East, which is not PAX East. I'm sorry. PAX Tabletop, PAX Unplugged. There we go. Which would be in Philadelphia normally. I'm almost certain isn't happening. I don't know if they've officially canceled it yet, but
not sure. Whatever. Isn't CES coming up too, or the replacement event for that?
Yep, lots of stuff. And New York Comic Con, I don't think has actually announced its plans. That's in October, but I can imagine that that's not going to be in person. I mean, again, like I'm sorry, in the United States, I'm just going to say this. In the United States, you should not be going to conventions.
Agreed.
I'm not going to speak for Europe.
Sad as it is.
Just don't until May at the earliest. My way I'm feeling is this time next year at the earliest. We'll see, of course. But just wrap your mind around that. Like, again, I love PAX Unplugged. I've gone the last 3 years. I've unbelievably enjoyed it each time, but I'm happy to give it up this year because for the safety of myself and my family and my community, like that's what you've got to put first, as much as we may love these kind of conventions and love the social experience, but health of our communities and health of our neighbors and health of ourselves is much more important. So, but I felt like Gen Con did a good job. So
yeah, watching
that they did. Three steps removed. So
along with that, we did take a little bit of time over the weekend to play some board games. And I actually want to take a minute to slop a game that I desperately wanted to like. And I'm going to slop Forbidden Desert. Not as a whole, but let me explain that I really love and would easily prop the first game in this series, Forbidden Island, which is a neat little co-op game where you're kind of Indiana Jones-esque figures rescuing some treasures from an island that is sinking, right? Kind of Atlantis vibes. Forbidden Desert then takes that, obviously, to a desert setting. And now your airship has crashed and you're trying to recover the pieces from it while there's a sandstorm blowing sand around and piling it up to block your path and all. And that is where my slop comes into play. Like three quarters of the game, or two games, are the same. And the things that they tweaked, for the most part, I really like. There's cool stuff that they're doing. The idea of the sand is neat. But the rule book is written so abysmally that I read and reread and Kristen read and reread that the actual rules on how the sand builds up and blows back and forth is completely unintelligible, not useful whatsoever. And several times contradictory that we noticed. So at some point here soon, I'm going to have to look up some YouTube videos and such. We were partway into the game before we realized, well, this is just not working right, and started rereading, trying to figure out what was going on. And I didn't have the heart to do deeper research then, but slops to that rule book.
Sounds kind of horrible.
Yeah, which is a shame because the theme is fun and I like co-op stuff. Let's just say that's a lot healthier on a marriage.
Yeah.
So we'll give it another try another time.
Yeah. So what's next? Oh, drinks. It's you, Will.
Oh, yeah. There we go. I almost forgot because I've been puttering around with this one for the last, like, 3 episodes, I think, and keep cutting it in the interest of time. But I would like to prop Original Sin. It's a, let's see, the full description here, according to Thai and Timber Brewery here in Springfield, is it is a cinnamon chocolate stout aged on cocoa nibs and cinnamon chips, soaked in Copper Run rum and balanced by the sweet nectar of milk sugar. Just 5%. It's actually remarkably low for as thick and heavy of a beer it is. It tastes like it would be something in like the 8 or 9 range. And is just thick, frothy deliciousness. So I highly recommend it if you happen to have any sort of way to try it.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds very good.
Yeah, hard to add much to that, but dagnabbit, we used to, you know, prop beers and beverages and foods and stuff much more often, so I wanted to bring it back.
That's fair. Yeah, we've just been drinking cheap beer recently, so I don't really have anything to add to this part. You had one more thing you wanted to slop, Will? Or spoilers, sorry.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I want to slop mower engines, or maybe I should be slopping myself because it's really just my own stupidity. But gave myself a good burn on one after mowing the lawn today because I went to touch something that had kind of jiggled loose, and it was just dumb. Shouldn't have done it. So slops to burning your finger.
Yeah, that sucks. That's definitely a sloppable thing.
Yeah, that's burning, all I got.
Burning your finger, I think, puts you in the danger zone?
Oh, so much. So much.